Please, 4 minutes.
All right. You may begin. Oops, that's blue.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Catherine Donahue from the Fairfax Public Defender's Office. On behalf of Mr. Mears is asking this court to remand his case for a new sentencing hearing on two assignments of error. With the court's permission, I begin with assignment of error number one, that the trial court abused its discretion in refusing to continue the sentencing hearing in this case. Under well-established principles, I must demonstrate both an abuse of discretion and prejudice, and it's our contention that both have been demonstrated from the record here. To begin, the reason for the continuance that was offered in the court was for two reasons: to comply with probation's recommendation that he undergo an ADS, or Alcohol and Drug Services evaluation, and that he be able to complete the IAP program, which is a drug treatment program in the jail. The trial court abused its discretion in denying that continuance request. This case had not been previously continued, and the evidence that was sought was not cumulative. This was not something where the court was in receipt of any sort of certified substance abuse records or treatment. In addition, there was no objection from the Commonwealth here, and that makes sense because there wouldn't have been any prejudice to the Commonwealth in this case. There were no witnesses on behalf of the Commonwealth present to testify. In fact, the defense is the one who presented evidence at this hearing. And there was no risk that any potential evidence would disappear if the case was continued to a later date.
The counsel just asked for a continuance. Did counsel ask the court to order an evaluation under the appropriate code section?
Well, Your Honor, that does go into, I guess, the second assignment of error, which is whether or not the trial court erred in not ordering the assessment or the evaluation take place. And it's true, at no point in the continuance request does the trial counsel specifically mention 18.2-251.01 or 19.2299. But I think in this context, the request for the evaluation was made pursuant to that statute for several reasons. The first is the trial court at the plea date ordered that a pre-sentence report take place and ordered that the defendant comply with the pre-sentence report. The court finds the authority for that under 19.2299, which directs the trial court to order the defendant comply with the pre-sentence report procedure, and then subsection D of that statute requires the defendant to submit to the substance abuse screening and, if necessary, an assessment. When Mr. Mears appeared for sentencing, he was appearing at a sentencing hearing with a pre-sentence report, with a recommendation in the pre-sentence report from the probation officer that he undergo a further substance abuse evaluation. And that's important because at this point in time, the trial court is the one who ordered that the pre-sentence report take place and ordered that the defendant comply with it. There was no opportunity for Mr. Mears to independently go out and obtain a substance abuse assessment or screening in order to put him in compliance with the statute. Because he was incarcerated, because no prior treatment records had ever taken place, because there had been no prior evaluations, it was necessary to comply with the statute that an ADS evaluation be ordered. And by requesting a continuance to allow that evaluation take place, Mr. Mears was simply asking the trial court to follow the law, follow the procedure under 19.2299 and 18.2-251.
But never asked the court, never specifically asked the court to order an evaluation. Just asked for a continuance.
In order to have the evaluation. And that was implicit in the request. Continue the sentencing hearing to comply with probation's recommendation that an evaluation take place. And certainly, when talking about that request upon the court, looking to whether or not that adequately put the court on notice of the statutory requirements under 19.2299 and 18.2251.01, I'd remind the court of something you said today, at least twice that I recall, that the judge is presumed to know the law and to apply it correctly. And we're dealing with a sentencing statute, we're at a sentencing hearing, and we're dealing with a specific recommendation in a pre-sentence report. So we're dealing with the very code section that Mr. Mears is now assigning error to on appeal. And as I cited in my reply brief, and as this court is well aware, with Judge Beals particularly, in the Jacobs case, there's at least language in there that the court is presumed to at least implicitly know the law and apply the law correctly. And so we would ask the court to find that it was an abuse of discretion regarding the first assignment of error to deny the continuance request, but as it relates to the second assignment of error, that adequately preserved the issue under 5A18.
And what about prejudice, counsel? That second prong. I made you jump to the second argument. Sorry, but what's the resulting prejudice, particularly in light of the motion to reconsider and the attachment of the assessment?
And that is certainly a complicated response, and so I'll take it piece by piece. The prejudice here is that Mr. Mears was prohibited from introducing concrete independent mitigation evidence from a licensed substance abuse counselor. Certainly, the court heard testimony from his wife and his mother that they are not licensed clinical substance abuse counselors. So the type of evidence that he was seeking to submit would have been the type that would have ultimately been more persuasive to the court, because it comes from experts.
Didn't the court have that substance abuse report from Loudoun County when it reconsidered the sentence?
It did when it reconsidered the sentence. And
so apparently the court wasn't too moved by the substance abuse evaluation.
Well, there's a problem with the substance abuse evaluation submitted as part of the reconsideration. As I stated in my brief, a reconsideration under a different record in different circumstances could have rendered the trial court's error harmless, but not in this case. And that's because the trial court was very specific that the reason the motion was docketed and ultimately the reason why it was granted was because it had been mistaken about the number of prior burglary convictions that Mr. Mears had. There were two convictions that were later not established to be burglary convictions. And that was the exact reason the trial court docketed the motion and granted the motion. At no point, just as in the original sentencing hearing, did the trial court acknowledge Mr. Mears' longstanding substance abuse addiction.
And that's probably because he was more concerned about the number of felony convictions he already had. But it seems to me that the appellant got exactly what he was asking for. He effectively got a continuance in that there was a reconsideration of the sentence, and he got a substance abuse evaluation that was presented to the court prior to the final entry of judgment.
And I would respectfully disagree, because for three reasons. One, it's clear from the record that this was not a true resentencing, where the trial court considered all mitigating and all aggravating factors.
Well, the trial court is presumed to consider what's before it, and counsel attached the assessment and made all of the arguments.
The arguments were made. The proffers were made, certainly. But at no point on the record did the trial court acknowledge that it had reviewed, considered that information. And that's important, particularly when we are looking at harmless error analysis under erroneously admitted evidence. We look to see how the trial court dealt with that evidence to determine whether or not it's harmless or not. Furthermore, in this case, a reconsideration derives its authority from statute under 19.2306. So it's not, in essence, a true resentencing. It requires that there be circumstances shown in mitigation of the offense and compatible with public interest. So on its face, it's not the same as a sentencing hearing. And so the fact that there was a later hearing does not mean that it put him back in the same position as he was back at the original sentencing hearing. Furthermore, the Loudoun County assessment, when you look at the record, specifically at page 147, it talks about the fact that he is not a Loudoun County resident. So he is not eligible for Loudoun County-based resources, Loudoun County-based programs. However, Mr. Mears was a resident of Fairfax County. So if he had had an alcohol and drug services evaluation ordered through our court, Fairfax, he would have been assessed for...
But he was in the Fairfax program. That was part of the request for the continuance.
He was in the local-based jail treatment program, but an alcohol and drug services evaluation would have evaluated him for entry into a local Fairfax community-based treatment program. And I point the court to Mock versus Commonwealth, because I think from there we can see why the silent record is what exposes the prejudice in this case and shows how this is not harmless. In Mock versus Commonwealth, the request was very similar. There was a probation revocation. The defendant requested a continuance to explore his entry into a drug treatment program. And that request was denied. But there, this court specifically found that the trial court specifically articulated the reasons why that drug treatment program wouldn't have been appropriate for that particular defendant. And therefore, there was no prejudice to the defendant.
Why couldn't the court here have just considered it wasn't appropriate for him? Because the court was very aware of his substance abuse issues, been brought to its attention by a number of witnesses. But the court stated, I can't ignore the fact that this is, by my count, a fourth burglary on your record, if I include the Loudoun County matter. Now, I know some of these got changed later, but by my count, it's a fairly sophisticated criminal act. And by my count, some 14 prior felonies. I don't believe probation is appropriate in this case. And consequently, he focused on the criminal history as opposed to the drug history, or focused more on the criminal history, though he's very aware of the long history of drug abuse.
I think that can be answered in two ways. The first, dealing specifically with this idea that when it comes to the denial of a continuance, the court is to try to keep in mind this idea of the right of a defendant to call for evidence in his favor. And unless they have reason to believe the request is spurious, that failure to grant the continuance may imperil the just determination of the cause, and that's from Gilchrist versus...
Part of my question is, why isn't it harmless given this enormous... I mean, the analysis he just gave and this enormous criminal record here and the sophistication of this particular criminal act, too.
If we look at Mock versus Commonwealth, there, the trial court specifically stated the reasons why drug treatment would not be appropriate. Mr. Mears never had that opportunity at his original sentencing date. And that's
but
why...
that's not a requirement by law for the court to do that. I mean, the things that Judge Beals just commented on shows what the trial judge was focused on. And the trial judge had all this other evidence in the record at the time of the decision.
But again, this trial court, for whatever reason, continued to turn a blind eye to acknowledging or recognizing the substance abuse. And the General Assembly, at least, has seen fit to establish a number of statutes that recognize that there's an ongoing drug epidemic, that defendants, every defendant convicted of a crime, whether it's a drug offense or not, need to be evaluated for a substance abuse screening and assessment.
But the defense attorney at resentencing argued it's going to take, basically, he's going to have to address the addiction issues which have led to this criminal behavior. So, Your Honor, we're requesting the court to consider suspending a greater portion of a sentence and bring it down to the mid-range of the guidelines. And didn't the court do that?
And, Your Honor, I do see my time is getting very narrow.
We'll give you a few extra moments.
At this point, Your Honor, though the trial counsel did request that there be a suspension of the sentence, there was one that was done. It ultimately went down to the 7.5-year sentence, which was the high end of the guidelines under the original prepared guidelines.
So he got what he asked for.
But the reason for it was not because of anything related to the substance abuse. It was because the court was correcting the record to reflect the defendant's proper convictions for burglary, not because of the substance abuse issue in this case.
All right, we'll give you a little extra time in your rebuttal. Thank you very
Thank
much.
You. Good afternoon. May it please the court. I'm Victoria Johnson for the Commonwealth. This court should affirm the trial court's judgment. Here, the defendant cannot show error or prejudice because, as just noted a moment ago, he got everything that he wanted, albeit perhaps not for the reasons that he wished. Here, the defendant wound up with a high end of the guideline sentence. He received a substance abuse evaluation that was ultimately before the Fairfax Circuit Court when his sentence was being considered. And as Judge Petty had pointed out, and this is something I hadn't thought of, he, in a way, did get a continuance because there was a reconsideration of sentence. Here, the trial court simply was unmoved by the substance abuse evidence when taken in consideration with the extremely long and robust criminal history that this defendant showed.
What about counsel's point that the assessment that got attached in 2014 was an assessment conducted in Loudoun County by Loudoun County, not in Fairfax County by Fairfax County.
I don't believe that makes a difference, Your Honor, because what was important for the court to look at by the defendant's own admission was the information in the report. I believe that the defendant says on brief that this was the exact information that the defendant wished to bring before the Fairfax court. And ultimately, the Fairfax court looked at that information and had the opportunity to consider it. The court was simply unmoved by it. And, you know, this case is not all that different from the Mock case. In the Mock case, the trial court said that, you know, this individual has such a difficult addiction that our treatment services here locally are not good enough from them for this particular defendant, wouldn't help them. Here, the trial court did kind of explain why it wasn't going the treatment route. The trial court said he has 4 burglaries, which were later corrected, and 14 prior felonies. That is a completely legitimate factor for the trial court to consider. And as the Commonwealth pointed out in brief, this defendant is not now without recourse. The DOC provides treatment for individuals who are in custody. This is not a situation where this individual is forever cut off from having any drug treatment. As I cited on brief, the DOC's operating procedures provide for that. By statute, DOC is required to take care of prisoners' health.
In fairness, I think that your opposing counsel, Ms. Donahue, would suggest that having that done in DOC versus in an outpatient environment is a little different.
Well, of course it's different, Your Honor. I did not mean to imply that it was not. However, I think that it's worth noting that we are not simply putting people in incarceration without any treatment whatsoever. On the other hand, though, this trial court had kind of 2 competing narratives to choose from. One, this history of drug abuse, which the court was well aware of. There was a lot of evidence in front of it, and eventually that evidence from a licensed counselor or a licensed professional came in as well. And yet, this long criminal history. Our trial courts, when fashioning a sentence, have broad discretion, and the trial court made the determination that it believed was correct. Now, going back to the issue of my 518 bar that I did want to talk about. Here, the defendant never told the court, not only I want a continuance and I want this evaluation, and I want to continue in my local program. The defendant also never told the court, I want you to order this evaluation. The guilty plea took place on April 8th, 2013. Sentencing wasn't until June 28th, 2013. The PSI doesn't bear a date, but there's no indication in the record that there was some kind of delay in providing the PSI. There's no reason defense counsel couldn't have moved for that evaluation prior to sentencing, to my knowledge. So they kind of rolled into court at the last minute asking for this evaluation. Never told the court that it was, as the defendant now argues, that it was statutorily obligated and that it would be reversible error not to order this evaluation. And while trial courts are presumed to know the law and apply it accordingly, this would be a change in the law. There's no case law stating that a court has to do this, and the plain language of the statute, as I discussed in some detail in my brief, doesn't really place an express obligation on the trial court. I submit the General Assembly chose language that was somewhat vague, which those of us here probably wish that they would not do, but to allow some flexibility in sentencing procedure. You know,
basically, you're referring to 18.2-251.
Yes, Your Honor.
So where it says, if the person is determined to have a substance abuse problem, the court shall require him to enter treatment and or education program or services if available, which in the opinion of the court is best suited to the needs of the person. So you're saying basically if it's determined, then you have to.
Yes.
But there's no express requirement to do for the court to do that.
For the court to do it. I think another entity could perhaps probation under the way that the statute is written. And we know that this the general.
Well, what about the language in the PSI that the assessment should be conducted?
The defendant shall be required to undergo a substance abuse screening. It does not say, are you referring to 299 or the actual PSI?
No, the actual PSI.
The actual PSI here. I think that was a recommendation from probation. The trial court, I think that the defendant should have moved for that screening earlier. However, if that is error, if the trial court was incorrect here, then I submit it as harmless error because of the Loudoun County assessment, which was ultimately in front of the court. And while the defendant points out that the court never articulated that it considered the substance abuse evaluation or any of the substance abuse evidence that was before it, we know from Bolden that insufficiency of evidence cases, we don't rely on statements on whether the trial court has made has drawn attention to particular evidence to know that the court has considered it, and also in the recent White case from the Supreme Court of Virginia that involved harmless error. We don't necessarily tie that evaluation to the words the court has uttered on the record. And I think that's my position. If the court has other questions, I'm certainly happy to answer them.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I ask you affirm.
All right, Ms. Donahue, we'll give you an extra minute or so.
Thank you.
Ms. Donahue, can I ask you, you talked about the fact that he's not a resident of Loudoun, he's a resident of Fairfax, but does it really matter if there's that Loudoun County assessment that gives the court the information it needs? What difference would it make if it had been one done in Fairfax? I recognize you'd like for him to be in the Fairfax program, but what difference does it make if the court's considering an assessment like that from Loudoun or Fairfax?
And that is the difference, because there are a multitude of Fairfax County inpatient and outpatient drug and alcohol treatment programs that he would have been eligible for as a Fairfax County resident. But because
is that in the record, counsel?
Your Honor, it says that in Loudoun County, the Loudoun County assessment says that as a non-Loudoun County resident, he's not eligible for their program. So the reverse would be true, that as a Fairfax County resident, he would logically be able to take advantage of the resources in Fairfax as opposed to
Loudoun.
But
there's nothing in the record suggesting what those resources are. In other words, defense counsel didn't say to the court.
That's correct.
Defense counsel was arguing drop the sentence.
That is correct.
Put him in a program in Fairfax.
That's correct.
Why didn't the defendant ask for a substance abuse evaluation at the time of his guilty plea to be done concurrent with the pre-sentence report?
Two reasons. The first, and I understand that the date of the pre-sentence report submission is not probably part of the record, but as practice, those reports are submitted about a week prior to the sentencing date. So that would not have been received until about a week prior to the sentencing date. The second reason, Your Honor, is
prior to the sentencing date, but why didn't he add, he knew he had a drug abuse problem when he pled guilty.
Well, and
why doesn't an attorney say, Your Honor, in conjunction with the pre-sentence report, we'd like this drug evaluation to be conducted also?
Well, and as Ms. Johnson said, the statute is perhaps more vague than we would like it to be because it does not obligate either probation or the trial court to order the screening and assessment take place. I don't think it's logical that it's probation's duty because if we look at 299 further, there is specific language, I believe, in C that the probation officer shall notify the victims.
But my question, I guess, is in conjunction with the request for a continuance. If he didn't ask for it to be done at that time, the court could say, well, you should have asked for that earlier. I'm not going to grant the continuance on that basis. That's not an abuse of discretion.
It's our position that even though the trial court is not listed as the entity explicitly ordering the screening and assessment, that it is the trial court's duty to order it. And that essentially, when it ordered that a pre-sentence report be done, that included the screening and assessment, which for some reason didn't take place.
But there was no objection to that.
There was a continuance request to comply with the probation's recommendation in this pre-sentence report to undergo the evaluation.
I thought the pre-sentence recommendation was that while he's serving the lengthy sentence they recommended, that he engage in some type of drug abuse program.
The pre-sentence report on page...
The end of the report.
At the end of the pre-sentence report on page 133 of the record, it does recommend that he undergo a substance abuse evaluation.
Is it evaluation or does it treatment?
Your Honor, I believe the language was evaluation,
like computer,
but I can check the record very quickly.
What page are you on?
133, at the top of the page, the last sentence, due to a significant substance abuse issues, it is recommended that subject undergo a substance abuse evaluation in order to address the possibility
of... I apologize. I thought you said treatment. I read it too quickly.
Yes, Your Honor. And I see that my time has expired.
Thank you very much.
We would ask the court to remand for a new sentencing hearing.
We'll agree, counsel.